to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole and search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on Earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m., Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Alexandra Menners of GalacticConnection.com, and this is a pre-recorded interview for March 22nd, 2016. As you know, we have a regular BBS radio show on Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 4:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and that is Station 2. And before we go ahead and jump into the interview with Mike Harris today, I would like to just point out that there are many changes going on with the divine masculine on the planet, and I had a conversation this morning that really triggered something within me, and that is just the simple word of gentleman. We use that constantly. Oh, he's such a gentleman. But in fact, I really do believe that that is what the world and the divine feminine is crying out for, is for the men of this world to return back to that of a gentility. I say this because I work with a lot of male clients, and we've had some conversations the last several weeks regarding this, and I'm seeing a pattern within all the men that I'm speaking to who are really going through a lot right now. I would ask all of the women and all of those who are listening to have some extra compassion for the way in which men are processing these intense waves of energy coming in. They're really affecting the programming that men have received for such an antiquated period of time, to be aggressive, to go and get it, to go out to battle, to protect and die for what you believe in. And although there is some honor in saying that, we really want to turn this whole paradigm around to a peaceful, cohabitating state of existence. And so I just wanted to say to all the men in the world that we love you, and we know that things are not easy when you're really feeling kind of upside down with the amount of emotions that are coming forth. And I would just ask all the women out there to please hold the space, and be patient and compassionate. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring Mike Harris on. As many of you know, Mike Harris is the financial editor of Veterans Today. He's also a radio host, a former GOP finance chairman, gubernatorial candidate for Arizona, and a senior vice president of Adamas Defense Group out of Switzerland. Mike is an expert in full contact mixed martial arts. His long-term expertise is as such that he's gained himself a lot of respect and the nickname Iron Mike. Mike was part of the Veterans Today group that attended the Damascus Conference of Combating Terrorism and Religious Extremism. He gave many television interviews that were broadcast to millions of viewers all throughout Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and Iran. In these interviews, he is constantly emphasizing and supporting the historical declaration that the real problem behind world terrorism is a large organized crime syndicate. Now, Veterans Today does spend a great deal of time writing articles trying to expose who this large organized crime syndicate truly is. Today, we're going ahead and dive into that and see what's going on with Syria and the pulling out of the troops according to the new decree by Putin. Hey, everybody. We have Mike Harris with us now today. And Mike, how you doing?
I am well. I'm doing okay today. And you? How are you doing?
Very well. I just had out-of-town guests back-to-back 1 week and then another week, and missing them both, but had a really good time.
So. Well, good. Good. It's always nice to have friends and loved ones in the house with you. It's always good.
Family coming back home. I mean, amazing. Fellow guardian.
It's a good thing.
Yes,
it's a good thing.
Yes, it is. So, you know, I'm sure people are kind of sitting at the edge of their seat with this whole amazing announcement that Putin has made about withdrawing troops, et cetera, out of Syria. And I really kind of wanted to go into a couple of questions. I pulled up some very essential core articles that you have been presenting on Veterans Today, and I thought I would ask you a couple of questions that maybe you haven't reviewed, or maybe I just didn't see them, of course.
Okay, go ahead.
All the information out there. But so at this stage of the game, we're talking millions have been wounded and 270,000 have been pronounced dead. Is it still at that point right now?
It's at that point. It's slowed down a great deal because of the current truce, ceasefire agreement, if you will. And so it's not happening at the rate that it was. Yeah. But these foreign intelligence agencies unleashed savages inside of Syria in order to topple the Assad regime and have their way over others. This is it's a sad thing that there are people in this world who think that that is the method to affect change for their benefit. And it's really a sad realization whenever you finally come to the conclusion that there are people in this world who profit off of human suffering and make tons of money off of other people's suffering. And when you get to that point, you really say, boy, what is wrong with these people? How can they live with themselves? And I don't quite understand the motives behind it.
Because I don't think they're human.
Well, you know, that's a whole nother discussion. We come back to that in a little bit here, but you want to ask about Putin. You know, one of the things with Putin, you haven't asked a direct question, but I'll go ahead and give you my take on it. Yeah. Forces within the U.S., elements within the U.S. have been saying Putin is an expansionist. He wants to expand and reconstitute the former Soviet Union. You look at the U.S. coup, the U.S.-sponsored coup in Ukraine. And you look at how restrained Putin was with that. I mean, imagine if China came in and pulled a coup in Canada or in Mexico and said, well, wait a minute, you know, this is our backyard. We're not going to allow you to do that. Putin showed extraordinary restraint with that. The only time that he flexed his muscle at all was about the Crimea situation. And when you had, 95% of the Crimea population voting to revert back to Russian control. And that's also one of Russia's major naval bases on the Black Sea is there. So, Putin's been remarkably restrained. And this move of withdrawing from Syria just as the truce takes place was brilliant strategic move, because any critics he would have who would say, this is more Putin expansion. Look, he's moving into Syria now. He's going to take over the country. He's not following the U.S. model. The U.S. model is, once you go into a country, you establish a base, and you keep that base there, in the case of Germany and Japan, 70-plus years. The U.S., once they're in, you can't get them out. Putin is taking the opposite track and saying, well, no, we're not going to move here. We don't want to be here. We're going to de-escalate as the situation permits. It was a brilliant move. It completely deflected the charges of him being an expansionist and trying to reconstitute the former Soviet Union. It undid the fear-mongering that takes place by elements in the West who need a permanent boogeyman to have to fight continually.
You know, and I noticed that this is basically the promise that he made to the Syrian people, is that he would be temporarily doing this.
Yes.
I also read that they're actually very, very apprehensive and fearful of the exit of these troops. What is happening?
I've been talking to the Veterans Today sources in Damascus, primarily Nahid al-Husani, and she's scared to death. She doesn't want the Russians to go. So it's too soon. Don't leave yet. We still have these ISIS, Daesh terrorists in our country. We're doing better against them, but don't go just yet. And so that's direct. And this was negotiated at a very high level between Putin and Assad, direct, one-to-one. And it's going to be a very slow, gradual exit until they're out of the country. But it's also done some good things for Assad, because the Syrian Arab Army has been on the ground. They've been leading the fight, the ground war, if you will, and they've been doing very, very well, and they've been making some significant inroads, and it's really reaffirmed Assad's position as a strong and capable military commander, and he's done very well. They've retaken Aleppo. They've cut the supply routes coming into from Turkey into Syria, and you can't forget that Turkey has been up to their eyeballs in this thing. And I have to remind you, Turkey has wanted to recreate the Ottoman Empire for some time. They have an opinion of themselves that most people in the West aren't aware of. And I want to remind you of how the Turks committed the Armenian genocide and wiped out the Armenians. And essentially stole all their valuables, all their loot, took it, and made themselves rich in the process. Now it appears that the Turks' target is going to be the Kurds. Destroy one people, then destroy the next people, then destroy the next people after that. It has to stop. The Saudis have got blood on their hands in this thing as well. Our good friends, the Saudis, who I wouldn't give you a warm bucket of spit for. But, their regime is in trouble. I wrote a white paper. Preston James, I actually wrote a white paper a year ago, around January 15th, talking about, if Putin was smart, the Saudis started to probe Russia by trying to drop energy prices to create an economic crisis within the Russian Federation. I wrote a white paper that said, look, if you want to stop Western aggression, the way to stop Western aggression is to drop the price of oil below $20 a barrel and keep it there until the Western banks collapse. The Western banks have been tottering. There's all this derivatives exposure out there, because I remember when oil prices were $1.05, $105, $110 a barrel, and people were buying derivatives contracts at that price. Now the price of oil is in the $30, $35 range. They've been trying to rally the price of oil. These things do happen. But Putin's got to keep the pressure downward to get the price below $20 a barrel to break the Western banks. The Saudis are heavily invested in Western banking. If we break the banks, the Saudi kingdom will fall, and we might be able to get some relief in this country from our big six, too big to fail, too big to jail banks, if they get toppled. And the mistake that was made during the 2007-2008 crisis was the bailout. And it was a mistake, because we have a process in this company. It's called bankruptcy. you could put a company into receivership, and you break that company up, and you have other investors come in and buy the pieces. And instead of having too big to fail banks, we'd have had 1,000 different banks out there now that would all be competing in, against each other, trying to maintain market, trying to maintain profitability. And it would have shown what the true value of these things are. This was really a rigged inside job by the bankers. And if you've noticed, none of them have gone to jail yet.
No, apparently not. And I was going to ask you, how invested are they in the Western banks?
The Saudis?
Yeah.
Oh, extremely. They've got significant positions. You look at companies like private equity firms, like the Carlyle Group or KKR. You look at how heavily invested they are. And there's layers of it that keep their their exposure hidden. Indirect, Blackstone Group's another one that's really, really big. There's, yeah. If you follow the breadcrumbs, there's about 12 or 14 companies that control all of the banks, all the big banks in this country. That's a big deal. But back to oil prices, I want to go back to one more thing. I want to give your listeners a heads up. Okay. Since oil prices are down and there is no excuse for the prices to be rising right now, and they've been creeping up, 20, 25 cents a gallon again. You've seen it. I've seen it. We got down to about $1.63 a gallon, and now it's going back up to $1.89, and they're trying to extract more cash out of the American people. So if the price of crude oil continues to fall, continues to go down towards that below $20 a barrel level, watch for this. This is I'm going to give you an element. Watch for there to be a refinery fire or a refinery explosion, something that's going to drive the price of gasoline up at the retail level. Because believe it or not, the oil companies kind of like $4 a gallon gasoline. They do pretty well with that. And you and I and regular people don't. But what you're noticing now in the economy is you can see the effects of it. People are feeling a little bit better about the economy because it doesn't cost them, 60, 80, 100 bucks to fill up their tank anymore. Mm-hmm. I drive an old Dodge pickup truck. It's a diesel, and it's got a 30-gallon tank. And I put 100 bucks in, and I wouldn't fill the tank when it was $4 a gallon.
Right.
And people are feeling a little more comfortable now. You can go fill the tank up for 40, 50 bucks. Hey, I'm it's half of what it used to be.
Mike, economically, that's one of the key strokes of bringing the economy forward is gasoline, so people have mobility to go spend money elsewhere.
Yeah, it is.
Enjoy the fruits of their labor.
Well, it is. If you're not putting, like I said, there was a time when I was putting 100 bucks and I wasn't filling my tank. I was getting close to full. I was at 3/4 of a tank, but it wasn't a full tank. Now I can go there for 40 or 50 bucks and fill the tank, and so now I can go out to dinner someplace.
Exactly.
Spend that $50 at a local restaurant and leave a tip for somebody who didn't have it before. Then it propagates throughout the system that way. That's how the you get the velocity of money within the economy. It'll increase that way.
Well, explain why have the prices been edging up again? What's actually going behind
the excuse they're giving us? The excuse, the official word is that, well, it's seasonal. We have to change the blend of our gasoline from our winter blend to our summer blend, and so we're retooling and we're changing the additives and all the other things that we put into the gasoline in order to do that. But it's going to cost you another 20-25 cents a gallon for us to work through this. There's shortages because of that. That's their excuse. Bottom line is they need more money. The flow of drugs out of Afghanistan has slowed down. I had a series of teleconferences with the Pashtun tribal leadership, a couple of their heavy hitters. Kadir Mahmood, he's a good guy, good man. He's one of the Mujahideen. He met with Reagan during when the Soviets were there. He's the one who helped topple get the Soviet Union out of Afghanistan at that time. Good guy, loyal to the Americans. Once the American presence gone, once the military presence out of their country. This is one of our guys. This is one of the guys who did the heavy lifting for us whenever it was the Russians in or you know, the Soviet Union in Afghanistan.
It's refreshing to even hear that there's some left.
Well, there are, and this is a good man. He's a good guy, and you know, the conversation that we had, he wants mining contracts. They've got some of the largest deposits of rare earths. They want to develop those deposits. They want American mining interests to come in. They don't want the Chinese to come in. They want Americans to come in. They want American interests to come in. But they say, look, we don't want American workers. We have people here who need employment. Yeah. We'll give you the contract. We need your expertise. We need your capital. Come in. Let's work out a deal that benefits our people and benefits your people. And so far, no American companies have been biting on it. But the point I was going to make is that this evil cartel out there, you have to realize that the American presence in Afghanistan, when the Taliban ran it, there was maybe 5,000. Let me get that back. The production of opium for heroin and morphine increased by 5,000% under the U.S. occupation. Okay, the Taliban nearly had the opium crops stomped out. So my advice to the Pashtun leadership was, you know, look, you don't want the American military there. You don't want to engage them. You don't want to fight with them. Ignore them. Create a wide berth. Ignore them. Just, you know, I mean, if you see them coming, cross the street, walk on the other side of the street, just leave them alone. Don't interact with them in any way. No interaction. Cut them off. No interaction. But if you want them to leave, start attacking the opium crops. When you see a field of opium poppies, you burn it. And the guy who's growing them, you give him a beating with a stick so he doesn't do it again. I mean, a big stick. And you do this time and again and again and again, and you eliminate the opium crop, and then there is no need for the American presence in Afghanistan, because that's what they're there. That's what they're doing. That's what they're protecting. This is a critical investment for those within our government who traffic drugs.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, back to the cartel. Do we know exactly who that consists of? I know we talked about it last time, that BP, Oil, ExxonMobil were funding ISIS. But other than that, who else is – you talk a little bit about the transporters who are making a ton of money. Who else is involved in this?
In the drug issue or the oil issue? Because there's multiple cartels.
Okay, right, the oil.
There's drug cartels. There's oil cartels. Right. You know, they're all there. What exactly? Because you know you have to realize, in Syria, in Iraq, the oil that's being stolen by ISIS, Daesh, al-Nusra, it's not getting from the ground to the refinery by itself. Now, one of the things that we recommended to the Syrian government on our recent trip there was that let's go back to the rules of piracy, you know, the maritime law about piracy. And if someone is transporting materials they've stolen from you in a pirate-type manner, which is what ISIS has been doing, you're allowed to seize those vehicles, whether it's a ship or a truck or anything else, you're allowed to seize it. And you have a civil penalty against the company who owned it, the ownership, you know, whoever owned the ship. There's legal recourse there. Well, the Russians took it one further, and what they've been doing is they've been blowing up the oil transport trucks, which we've tracked serial numbers on this. Now, these trucks came out of the U.S. These were U.S. trucks, U.S. oil transport trucks. They were shipped out of the port of Galveston, and they were shipped to Turkey. And we know who the buyers were. You know, so there's this the Vanguard Group was actually the buyers. So the Vanguard Group is up to their eyeballs in this, all right? And so what the Russians have done, to date, they've destroyed on bombing raids 2,900 of these. You know, you see them driving down the road, those 18-wheelers that are, you know, gasoline trucks. They've just destroyed 2,900 of them so far. Now, they've not seized any ships at sea yet. I've been hoping for that. But, you know, I looked at John Kerry's statements yesterday that, whoa, ISIS is committing genocide, and they've killed the Zaidi people, they've been killing Christians, they've been killing Shia Muslims, they've been, you know, ethnic cleansing that part of the country. And, you know, Kerry is coming in, you know, a day late and a dollar short, as usual. I gave an interview on Press TV yesterday about this specific topic. And Kerry is now talking about going after, you know, the funding mechanisms as to how ISIS and Daesh have been clearing their money. Because when the refineries receive it, it has to be paid for. Some bank is facilitating that transaction. Yeah. This guy's writing a check. This guy's cashing the check. There's a bank that's part of this, and that bank is also involved in you know, aiding and abetting supporting terrorism, as well as a transportation company, as well as a refinery who buys it. This is all part of it. What's happening now is we've put pressure on the BPs, the Exxon Mobils. There's pressure on them because they've been exposed. So now they're trying to hang all of this on Erdogan's neck, the prime minister, president of Turkey, whatever he is, the guy who's calling the shots over there. And they're trying to hang this on him completely. And, you know, he's got a lot of guilt there, but he's not the only one. We have to keep peeling this onion. And you look at how corrupt our political system is in this country, how many bad actors we have. If you go to the VT website, you can pull up pictures of John McCain in meetings with the leadership of ISIS. And he's bragging about it. He's all happy that he's supporting these people. Well, these people are now what John Kerry is calling the terrorists. So is the U.S. really going to have an investigation? Is it really going to have merit? Is it really going to have meat on it? Or is this going to be just another whitewash that they see? The thing of it is, whenever you have anything, say it's a congressional investigation, insert the word whitewash. Because congressional investigations are meant to hide the truth.
Right, it's a cover up.
Yeah, so if Kerry is talking about this, let's hope it's real. Let's get it out of the U.S.'s hands. Let's get it into The Hague and you know, get it someplace where there might be a fair hearing on this and not subject to U.S. influence peddlers from K Street that'll try to get our elected officials, our Department of Justice, our others to look the other way and find a more palatable solution other than going after the people who really caused all this you know, death and suffering in Syria.
So has there been any really substantial intel as far as the repercussions of all of the support that Syria has been receiving from Iran and Russia and apparently a lot of other special forces, not only with increasing their higher quality weaponry and mm-hmm. guidance systems and things like that, which I was reading, I was wondering, have you had any feedback as to how that's affecting the opposition?
Well, you've got you have Russian special forces in there. Spetsnaz are in there. They've been training and creating Syrian Spetsnaz. You know, they're equivalent. The same thing the U.S. does. If we've got, you know, Army Rangers or Green Berets or Navy SEALs, and they're put into a country as advisors, their job is to go in there and train those guys to make them as good as they are.
Yeah,
and so that's what the Russians have been doing with the Syrian Arab Army. The Iranians, their Quds force, another very, very high quality, military force out there. They've been active on the ground in Syria as well. And then you've got the Hezbollah militia. Hezbollah militia has been in a state of war now for 50 years, and these guys are tough. So you've got these three elements in there that are buttressing the Syrian Arab Army, and the Syrian Arab Army has picked up their game and is doing quite well. And now the good news here with this truce, the ceasefire, even though there's violations on a daily basis by the Turks in particular, it's allowed the Syrian army to catch its breath. It's allowed them to resupply, bring in new reinforcements, and to really pick up their game. And so if this ceasefire ever breaks, or the discussions, the talks don't go well, where there has to be a break on this, then the Syrian army is going to be in a position to be very, very effective. Refreshed, rested. It's like a boxer. You know, he gets that couple minutes between rounds, you know, catch his breath, clear his wits, go back in there and knock the guy out. And that's what they're going to do.
Well, good. Now, do you think it's an accurate statement that essentially Syria is up against the Saudis, the Qataris, the Turks, Israelis, Americans, British, French? Is that accurate? Yep.
That is absolutely accurate. And so one of my discussions, and I'm going to let this cat out of the bag right now, is that if these peace talks are not successful, if they fail, then it's time for the Syrians to do what the Turks and the Saudis and others have been doing, and that is they've been trying to decapitate the Syrian government. There's been death threats. They've been trying to kill Assad. His security is very, very tight. They've been trying to kill ministers, generals, anybody they can. It would be time then for the Syrians to have a justification to apply the same type of strategy and tactics against the Saudis and against the Turks and against the Israelis and decapitate their leadership. And so do we want to see this happen? No, we don't. We want the peace talks to succeed. we don't want them to fail. We want ISIS out of Syria. We want ISIS out of Iraq. Send them all to Turkey. Send them to Saudi. Let them deal with these monsters they've created. But if the peace talks fail, then one of the options that the Syrians have left is to do unto others as they're doing unto you. So that's
officially this war has been going on for about what, 5 years?
5 years.
Okay, and so at this point, I remember something went down where Putin suddenly had kind of changed his strategy about supporting Syria and decided to send in more high-tech weaponry and support and flyers and training, et cetera. And I was wondering, what was it that actually triggered him to make that decision?
I could speculate. I don't have a definitive answer on that. I'm not Vladimir Putin. I'd have to ask him directly.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe you would know. What was so major that actually caused him to...
I'll tell you what it is. It's the domino theory. Remember back our justification for fighting in Korea and Vietnam was we have to stop the spread of communism.
Yeah.
Because if we don't stop it in Korea, it's going to go down to the next country. If we don't stop it in Vietnam, it's going to go to the next country.
Right.
Okay. That by revealing the domino theory, that tells you how the U.S. military planners think. And you had General Wesley Clark come out and say, we're going to change regimes in 7 countries. And they've been pretty successful so far. I mean, Libya is gone. Iraq is gone. Syria was on the ropes, but it's coming back. But what was going to happen if Syria fell, then they're on Iran's door. Then Iran falls, they're on Russia's door. Wow. And so it's a step function. Putin didn't have a choice. If he wanted to stop it, he didn't want to stop it on the Russian front. He wants to stop it on the Syrian front. So it's better to have stopped it there. From a Russian point of view, it's better to have aided them early on than to wait till that's in your own house.
Sure, in your own backyard.
Yeah, your own backyard. You don't want them coming up the Black Sea at you. You don't want that. You don't want them coming across the Iranian border into Russia. You do not want that. So it was a preemptive intervention in order to stop Western imperial aggression.
And that wasn't that long ago, right?
No, it was. I'm sounding like a 1960s communist here, and I'm not. I stopped Western imperial aggression, but sometimes you have to call a spade a spade. And I thought those people who were saying that back in the 60s were out of their mind. But here I am all these years later saying, this is what it's really going on. This is what I have witnessed directly in my own lifetime. My own government is behaving badly. I mean, the United States is on the wrong side of history.
Yeah. Well, and who's really writing history, Mike?
The winners write history.
Exactly.
They always have. Well, that makes you wonder. Was World War II really the war that we thought it was? I don't believe that it was. I think it was a very different war than what we've been taught in our history books. Now, I'll give you an example. My son, he's now 17, but when he was a freshman in high school, he had to write a paper about the fall of the Soviet Union. Okay. So, you know, he was going to write a paper. Said, look, wait a minute. I got a couple guys you can talk to. You can talk to Lee Wanta, who was President Reagan's, special security advisor under the Totten Doctrine. And, he did a lot to engineer the collapse of the Soviet Union. And if you want to, I'll put you in touch with Colonel Evgeny Khrushchev, KGB colonel, grandson of Nikita Khrushchev. And you can get the perspective of the fall of the Soviet Union from both sides. What do you think? He goes, hey, that'd be great. Put him on the phone. He's on for 2 hours with Wanta, getting briefed over it. He was on for probably 45 minutes with Colonel Khrushchev. He wrote his paper. He turned it in. He gets it back with an F on it. And, he called me. He goes, Dad, what have you done to me here? You know, I said, I got an F. I said, wait a minute. Did you footnote it? Is it properly annotated? Did this happen? He said, well, yeah, I have footnotes. Did you tell your sources? I said, good. And go back to your teacher and tell him to check with his sources.
Time to go meet the principal, Mike.
Well, the kid was right. He had a right to get something else other than regurgitate the pablum that they want to feed him in school and tell him how things were. And so, after consideration, that the teacher changed his mind and gave him an A on the paper. But it's just nuts because the teacher wants to see just what the book says, and they're not teaching anything. And that brings us to another problem in this country we have is the media cartel. We've got six sources of media sources. Three of them are defense contractors, and they also write all of the textbooks in this country.
Wow, I did not know that.
They do. They control it. They control everything that. They control all opinion, so that they control it from a very early age. Cradle to grave control over what you're allowed to read and think.
I mean, I knew that, but I didn't know that they were responsible for that. Now, not to pull away from what you're talking about, but just to go back to Putin, What would you say to all the people that are kind of still sitting on the fence? Yes, they're feeling some impeccability in the strategies that Putin has shown to the world, the amount of restraint, the fact that he's calling the United States and the government on a lot of their behind-the-scenes BS, and people are applauding. But what would you say to all of those that are saying, well, you know what, he's still part of the elite, and really, can we actually ever trust this man?
Well, I've had this debate internally to myself, and so far I have not seen anything come out of Putin that tells me he's not to be taken at face value. I see these little things where they'll have a picture of him, his fingers will be like this and the devil horns or whatever that's he's an Illuminati. I don't know. What I do see is the measurable effect is from the fall of the Soviet Union to the present day, no one has done more to improve the standard of living of the Russian people since the Tsar. Okay? The standard of living. What I see as an outsider, I see a man who truly cares about his people, his country, and his culture. And so I did like his comment to Erdogan that said, if you don't knock it off, we're going to come in there and we're going to put Constantinople back into a Christian community again. And you better brace yourself, Bridget, because we can do it. And I thought that was a pretty cheeky comment to back Erdogan down, because Turkey might think they're tough. All right, let them think that. They're no match for the Russian bear.
Yeah, I was going to say, no way. Now, do you know much about Russian history? Because I'm curious as to how many actual wars has Russian pursued like that, like the United States? Has it been more defensive or offensive?
Well, if we go back just to the last couple hundred years, Napoleon, how do I phrase this? Napoleon broke his dick trying to fight the Russians. he damaged.
Thank you, Mike, for that.
He damaged himself and never recovered. That's why Wellington was able to beat him at Waterloo, is because of the defeats he had trying to go in and take Russia. Most of the Russians haven't been a warring people. They've been fighting defensive wars. You look at the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yes.
This was a real big one here. This was, you know, this was not the Russian people. The Bolsheviks were different. They were they were a different breed that, that came in. Those were not Russians. Those are what I'll call Khazarian Mafia. You know, what we call Ashkenazi Jews a lot of times. But that was a coup. That was a revolution. And they murdered 100 million Russians. You look at World War II. Hitler wasn't fighting against the Russian people. Hitler was fighting against the spread of Bolshevism into Europe. And that's what caused him to have to march and try to get to Moscow. And so, you know, the Russian people have had, you know, they've had the crap kicked out of them forever. And they're a tough people. You wonder why they're cynical. That's why they're cynical. Because this has gone on for generations and generations and generations.
Well, and think about it. Somebody's got to go toe-to-toe with the U.S. And, you know, although things have been staged regarding the Cold War, you know, that was actually necessary to kind of keep the United States even going beyond where they already have gone.
Yeah, let me say something. Let me say this about that. The Cold War was indeed staged, and it was staged for the benefit of the military-industrial complex. That's who the beneficiary was. During the Cold War, we need to build another, you know, 2,000 ICBMs because the Russians built more. You know, they never had a defense request refused, never. And after, whenever Reagan brought down the Soviet Union and brought down the Berlin Wall, there was no boogeyman to fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Lee Wanta did his job. You know, bankrupted the Soviet Union.
Well, but I noticed in one of your articles, it's kind of like that's caught them and bit them in the butt now. Because of the fact that they built up such an arsenal, in one of your articles you were talking about that, yeah, maybe the Syrian weapons and bombs and things like that, yeah, they might be older, but they're actually very effective. I don't know.
Well, there's, you know, the Russians are flying some state-of-the-art jets. I mean, here's what happened. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Russians still had to find a way to defend themselves. The U.S. military-industrial complex builds systems to not work. They build them to not work or to not work optimally so that they can continue to supply upgrades in ongoing contracts and a number of things. They don't build them to work. A prime example, look at this F-35, the Joint Strike Fighter. There you go. It's a turkey. It's 10 times over budget already. It doesn't perform. The software doesn't work. It's a turd. Let's just call it what it is. It's not a good thing. But it's built to supply a cash flow to its manufacturers for a long time because, we're going to have to give you an upgrade to fix that problem. And we'll have to give you another upgrade to fix this other problem. And we're all on cost-plus contracts, so we're guaranteed profitability going forward. And the Russians didn't have the luxury of being able to fund those type of programs. They had to come up with efficient and effective and cost-effective weapon systems that work because the country was broke. They had been bankrupted, but yet the responsibility to defend your country, defend your people doesn't go away. So how do you do it on a shoestring? You have to be effective. You can't engineer in defects to cure them later. You have to get it right the first time. And that's what they've done. And the U.S. military has been taken aback by the state of the art that the Russians are showing them.
Wow. I think, did you also talk about how the Russians are like the number one snipers in training out there?
I didn't talk about that, but
that was one of your articles.
But they're very, very, very good. Let's just say this. Okay. Here's the thing. You know, the U.S. has got some very, very good, very elite military forces. The Russians do too, but there's a different mindset in it. And you know, our days of a professional army, it's not the best model. And it's not the best model from a democratic point of view. Now, I do not support the draft, but what the draft does is the draft keeps government honest. Because if you have to draft our young men and women, I have a 17-year-old boy. you know, I do not want to see him go to Syria to fight in that sandbox. That's why I go instead, so he doesn't have to. Okay?
Along with all the other men and women.
Along with all the other men. It's not just my kid. It's every 17-year-old out there. I don't want to see any of them go. I don't want to see them come home in body bags. I don't want to see them come home missing limbs with brain damage and PTSD and prone to suicide. I don't want to see that happen to these guys. That's why I go. But with a draft in place, the public gets angry when their sons and daughters come home in pieces. Okay? Now, the excuse is, well, it's a professional army. He knew what he was signing up for. What are you whining about? You got a little PTSD? You know, go home, blow your brain out. They don't care. They're using the excuse of the professional army to our military is not, the personnel within our military are not treated well by the Department of Defense. And I can talk about this at length because you look at Vietnam, there was no excuse for exposing these young men and women, 18, 19, 20, 25 years old, to Agent Orange. That was a risk that they didn't need to be exposed to. We've got guys now, Gordon Duff still has problems with his exposure to Agent Orange. So does every other Vietnam-era vet that I know. They've all been exposed to it. They all have health problems. The ones that are alive have health problems.
Mike, I just got to interject because with my DNA system, I see it a lot with the vets that I've worked on.
And in this generation of vets from Iraq and Afghanistan, we're going to see problems with depleted uranium. We had problems with Gulf War syndrome. They didn't know what caused it. They're giving them all these injections, all these inoculations, all these things that affect their physicality. Yeah. And until we change that system, until we start treating our military personnel as if they're valuable because they are, these are our sons and our daughters.
Absolutely.
And if we don't treat them valuably, there's no incentive for them to go in. And I advocate that you're a fool if you sign up. You're a fool if you go in.
Because instead of being treated like they're an experiment.
Yeah, that's what they do. They're treated like lab rats.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see that happen to any of our kids. So, the way to change this is to let's roll the VA into the Department of Defense. Let's eliminate the VA. Let's put their budget in the Department of Defense, and let's have a mandate that states before you can spend a dime on anything else, you have to spend money to take care of the veterans you've already got.
Right on.
And then that would change the spending model so that it makes sense to treat our kids not as lab rats, but to treat them as human beings. And granted, if you got to go out and fight a war, there's risk in that. But you don't need to have additional risk of exposure to toxins that are going to haunt you for the rest of your life and give you health problems for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So it's time to clean that up. It's time to change it. It's time to take a much more aggressive attitude toward how our military treats our kids, because that's who they are. They're our kids.
Oh, it's like there's so many things going on in my head. If we're looking at the Syrian war and the exchange of bombs and weapons that are being used at this time, what are there any differences to the strategies on the part of ISIS and the way that they're operating against the Syrian army versus the Syrians, the Russians, and the Iranians, and how their tactics are being used? Is there a distinct difference in the way that it's brought forth this ability for Russia to say, wow, we've had some victories, we can finally leave?
Well, ISIS had an effective strategy. The Russians came in in order to fortify the Syrian Arab Army. The Iranians came in, the Hezbollah militia came in, and they took the battle to ISIS themselves. ISIS hasn't solved that riddle yet. They don't know how to fight back. They don't know how to respond. And that's why they demanded a ceasefire in order to take some time, maybe figure this out, maybe find a way to get themselves out of there alive. So,
do you see that as a really strong possibility, the ceasefire?
Well, I'm pessimistic about it. I would like to see it work. But by the same token, I still have to say, until it's not a deal till it's a deal. And let's, you know, if this is a brokered thing, these people for ISIS, I was a bit encouraged by Kerry's remarks the other day that they want to treat ISIS as a crimes against humanity, committing genocide, et cetera. These are all hanging offenses. And so if the U.S. is genuine and sincere in this, let's take this all the way to the highest levels. Let's go back to the people who supply material support. Let's take this to the banks. Let's take this to the transportation companies who are moving the oil, the refineries who are buying it. Our politicians, like Senator John McCain, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, we have photographs of him in Syria meeting with ISIS leadership. Wait a minute. You know, if Kerry is sincere in what he says, he'd better be willing to prosecute them all and to go after them all, hammer and tong. Because it's going to create a lot of problems. And the problem just isn't within government, you know, clowns like McCain, you know, treasonous. I can't say a clown. He's not a clown. He's a very dangerous man. He's a very, very sick man that needs to be replaced, hopefully, this primary. He's got a challenger for the first time in a very, very long time in the primary on the Republican side. But these people need to be taken to task. And if Kerry is sincere, with what he says, this is not just window dressing. I'd like to see guys like McCain get prosecuted. I'd like to see oil companies like ExxonMobil maybe bring in their board of directors and their top 50 managers and have them prosecuted. That's one of the things on our last trip to Syria that we did is we introduced the Syrian government to U.S. legal counsel so that when this settles down, when this is over, that they can be represented in the U.S. federal courts and sue for damages that were caused by the people who were buying the oil, the people who were supporting terrorism, the people who promoted it, like John McCain. And there's civil remedies as well as criminal remedies. And that was one of the last trip that we made in September. That was one of the things that we were there for, was to get them introduced and get them properly represented, try to get the sanctions removed.
Right,
so that Syria can actually function as a country again.
You know, Mike, if there's any kind of silver lining in this at all, I believe it's been said that once the Mideastern countries united and became more of a solidified force, it would be pretty much a game over, forcing ISIS and the American intervention to be gone. And I've noticed, like, Christians are involved in gathering together to assist the Syrians, the Sunnis, all of these different types of factions. How do you see that playing a part?
Well, I've been told that within, you know, 10, 15 years, we're going to have a new Middle East, and that is going to be a unified Middle East. Local autonomy, but unified, a Middle Eastern Union, if you will. I've been told that is a, you know, 10, 15 year projection out there. I don't know how valid it is. I can't confirm it, because the only thing that'll confirm it is the passage of time. But I've been told by what I consider a reliable source that is what we're going to be looking at here in decade and a half.
Wow, that'll certainly change the politics on a world scale, won't it?
Yes, it will. And, you know, the thing with it is, we didn't have any wars in the Middle East until Israel was created. You know, it was a different place back then. And that incursion, really, really upset the apple cart. And it's really changed a lot of things.
And I want to ask you about Israel, but I just have to point this out. I got to point this out. I read that there was a group of commandos that were called the Protective Lions. Just had to put that out there. FYI for all you folks, all you Lirans listening. Anyway, so how is this fitting in with the Palestinian-Israeli conflict?
That's a big issue. You go into Lebanon and all the way up to Syria, in fact, and you go past these refugee camps. Well, whenever you say refugee camp, you think, well, camp, it's a temporary, they've been there for a couple of weeks. They've been there for 50 plus years, okay? It's not a camp. It's an enclave now, and to use the term camp is a misnomer. Wow. Now, organized crime is very active in these camps, and there's a lot of human trafficking, a lot of drug trafficking. These are the downtrodden people. They're being taken advantage of by criminal elements on a very, very large scale, and it's a very, very sad thing to see and to realize that we have allowed this to happen on our watch.
Wow.
And that people are that in, you know. You know, when you see young girls as young as 14, 13, 14, 15 years old being sold, being trafficked, and that's all they're going to do the rest of their life. And when they're 30 years old, they're going to be dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're never going to have a family. They're never going to have a boyfriend. They're never going to get married, have a husband, none of that kind of stuff.
And they'll die of a disease.
They'll die of a disease or until they wear them out.
Yeah. Totally.
And so this is criminal activity. These are crimes. And there's people out there, like I said, who profit from human suffering. And those are the targets. Those are the ones we have to get them and gut them. Yeah, that's, I'm not as forgiving as you are. You're very forgiving. You try to turn the energy. No. You, there's certain things you do. You can't say I'm sorry for, you know, you got to pay the price.
Well, I would have to say I'm just all about bringing the way in which we think about resolution and changing the combative nature that we've always held. I'm not saying that I don't understand that there is a place for the military at this time in this reality right now. Okay? I want to make that clear. But at the same time, I also feel that it is the mass consciousness of how we feel we will resolve something. And it's those like yourself who are taking a higher path that really want freedom and justice and liberty and free will for all of these young men and women that are being sold, human trafficking, which is all over the world. Let's face it, it's not just in that area.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's a virus. It's a cancer on this entire planet. How do we stop that? And part of it is the root is how we see and react to that information. So I'm just going to go on record to respond to you. But I did want to ask you, has Israel truly kind of backed off on attacking Palestine?
No.
Okay. There were some rumors going around.
No, they have not. You know, the Palestinians are pushing back. You'll see stories on the news every week or so, a knife attack. You know, they've disarmed the Palestinians, but you can take all the guns, but there's still something else. If it wasn't knives, it'd be baseball bats or you know, steel bars or something. But the Palestinians are pushing back, and they're trying to hurt the Israelis back in order to get them to back off and to stop brutalizing their people. I mean, this is Gaza is a large outdoor prison camp, and you know, it's a very, very sad situation, and particularly when you look at it that the Ashkenazi type Jews, who are your strongest Zionist types, they have no inkling. They converted to Judaism in the, you know, 1790 or something, and they're about as Jewish as my relatives were, you know. About, you know, they're not, and they never lived there. They never have claim to that land. They adopted the story, and they that's what they went with. So,
and so, Mike, what's the latest status of what you've heard regarding Netanyahu and his role with the whole Syrian conflict?
What I've heard is he's been told to stand in the corner and be quiet.
And if
he doesn't, there's going to be some repercussions. That's what it is. I don't know what those repercussions are, what they could be, but you know, he's been told to stand in the corner and be quiet.
Yeah, interesting.
See, and you have to look at this whole thing. You know, Syria wants the Golan Heights back. That's their land. It was stolen from them by Israel. You know, what was that? 1972, I guess it was. But the discovery of massive amounts of oil that are in the Golan that Israel wants and Syria wants, and you know, it's not Israeli land. It's merely occupied territory. So it's an inter- it's things are getting more interesting.
There is very strong evidence that a very important Stargate is there, which has everything to do with the extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. And so there's also that layer and that element definitely playing out.
You've heard of Palmyra, right?
Yes.
That is where the second Temple of David was built.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And that is why there has been so much focus from ISIS. ISIS trying to blow up the cultural heritage of Syria. That's one of their motives, is to bring these things down, destroy them, you know, close the doors and lock them. So that's I just think it's very interesting.
I think they're still looking, literally, they still are in search of ancient relics regarding the Stone of Destiny, the Ark of the Covenant, the Spear. They're still looking for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to find it.
I'm well aware what they're doing. And you look at how the U.S. looted the museums in Iraq, and how that is, and how they've instructed ISIS to go, you know, loot the historical sites up there and try to cart off everything you can carry off. That's part of it. I mean, that's the other group that needs to be prosecuted, is the antiquities dealers in London who are selling these things stolen from Syria. These guys are aiding and abetting terrorism. They're funding and financing it. But these relics, this is a big deal. This is something that borders on mysticism here. But it doesn't mean it's not real.
Of course not. Yeah.
And this is the realm that we have to live in. And it's time that people realize that a lot of these stories, a lot of these myths that we grew up with, you know, there might be more than just a grain of truth. There might be another reality out there that parallels our own that we're not even aware of.
So. Very true. And especially when you're talking ancient relics, can you honestly stand there and say that you absolutely know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they do not exist? I don't think so.
Well, you know, you look historically, you look, why was the Library of Alexandria burnt? Why was that such a strategic target? Yeah. Because that was the center of Gnostic wisdom.
Yeah.
And it had the formulas there as to how to defeat the Archons. So that had to be destroyed. So these type of things go on. The burning of the Library of Alexandria is no different than what they're doing to Iraq and Syria today. They're trying to destroy any evidence of any extraterrestrial involvement or things out there. They're trying to keep the history of this planet, this world, our people, our race, hidden from us. Because we're more controllable that way.
Absolutely.
If we knew who we really were and what our real history is, we wouldn't be falling for the BS you see on primetime news.
No, and if people cannot snap out of it and see that an aggressive task force going in and shutting down any library, a library, like, you know, you need to be constantly questioning, why are they doing this? Every piece of news that you're receiving, you should be, you know, siphoning through it and saying, why? Who is behind the agenda? What are they here to gain? What is it doing for the masses? Is it benevolent?
And the answer is no. I mean, when I talk about the burning of the Library of Alexandria, that happened, you know, that had to be close to 2,000 years ago. And that was a loss of the record of humanity. I mean, imagine, you know, if we had access to text and script, things that went back, you know, 5, 8, 10,000 years, 12,000 years, we still had those records, but they were destroyed back then. And keeping mankind ignorant of who we are and what our history is one of the goals of whatever this outside force that's interfering in human events.
You got it. And keeping us from knowing where we're going to go. The other thing I want to add to that is, you know, there are quite a few that have come forward and said that they feel beyond a shadow of a doubt that a lot of these stolen records or so-called burned records, that all of them managed to be stored in the Vatican.
Interesting. Well, you know, the Vatican is famous for its library that nobody can have access to unless you're a member of Opus Dei or something. I don't know. I don't actually know who gets access to it because I'm not supposed to know. But if the Vatican really wanted to help humanity, maybe they ought to open those vaults and let other scholars come in and study what these records say. That's a challenge to the new pope. And, I look at the first meeting between the Eastern Orthodox and the Western Catholic Church, the first meeting in 1,200 years. I look at that as a very good sign that perhaps we're going to make some progress, that perhaps things may come together, that some of these religious there's no need to have religion wars. If we understood our history, if we understood who we are, we wouldn't be fighting over, did Jesus, was he left-handed or right-handed? Who would care? You know, these silly things that divide people. And you look at the same. You look at the same thing within the Islamic faith. You know, the Sunni Shia schism. There's always been this divide and conquer, and it's obviously a deliberate strategy to keep people fighting and to keep people fighting with each other. So, you know, who or what has the ability to keep mankind so engaged in a constant battle with themselves when it doesn't serve our best interest to fight each other?
Yeah, and when you peel it all away, you're going to find out that it's like, you know, 0.5% of the population's really at orchestrating the entire conflict to begin with, creating all the separations amongst the countries. I don't know, it's disgusting. So I do want to ask you, what about the Geneva talks? You know, I mean, is that actively going on right now?
Oh yeah, they're going on. They're in Geneva. They're talking about that. So that's how we got to the ceasefire, the truce that's in place now, is because of Geneva. You know, the Saudis tried to come in with preconditions and they were slapped down. Because that was a recipe for failure. And, you know, I have to give a lot of credit to the Assad regime for getting them this far without preconditions to date. But, they tried to have a precondition was we'll have to have a presidential election right away. Well, wait a minute. Let's have a parliamentary election first. They just had a presidential election in June of 2013. Managing editor of Veterans Today, Jim Dean, was there as a poll watcher, as an international observer. And I talked to Jim in depth about this. Saw him in Atlanta a couple weeks ago. And, we had a long talk about that. He said, no, Mike, the United States wishes our elections were that clean. And that's the other thing about our political process here. It's been hijacked. Folks, you know, if you have the opportunity to vote on an electronic voting machine, demand a paper ballot. Make sure that your vote is counted. Make sure it's real. Make sure there's a record of it. Because these voting machines can be programmed like a video game or like a Las Vegas slot machine, all these electronics. They can be programmed to swing. To change your vote immediately, if you hit for candidate A, it's going to register you for candidate B, and there's no way you have a record of it once you're out of the booth. It's gone. It's done. So always ask for a paper ballot. Insist on one. That's why early voting is good, because you can get a paper ballot you mail in. Those are tough to forge. Those are tough to change. Now they may forget them in the trunk of a car and hide them or something like that, but they still exist. And these things can be reconciled, because our political process is out of hand. And you go back to the election of 2000, when George W. Bush stole the election. Now, I've always been a lifelong Republican. I got to tell you, I've been a lifelong Republican because there's a number of conservative principles that I agree with. Okay, I think smaller government, lower taxes. I think that a good job is the best welfare program you can offer anybody. Just simple things. But I've had to distance myself from the Republican Party because of the likes of George W. Bush, who stole an election to get in there. That's not the party I support. That's not the principles I believe in. We have to have self-determination in this country. And if that's taken from us because people are underhanded and do crummy things to steal elections, I can't associate with those kind of people. And, I look at Barack Obama, and I'm not an Obama fan. I'm just not. But I think, given what he inherited from Bush, the train wreck that this country was. I mean, of two wars, Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, $7 trillion spent on these wars. This was nuts. This was a terrible situation that Obama came into. Okay. And, you know, I just, you know, I have to give him credit because he's been a better president than Bush was on his best day. He hasn't done any real damage. I mean, I'm not a fan of Obamacare. I don't think it should have been passed. The people were against it. You know, and I think he should have had enough gumption to say, look, if this bill isn't going to be the right bill, if it isn't going to do for the people, we're not going to let the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies write the law for us. We're going to write this to benefit the people. If he would have done that and tabled it until he could get the law he wanted, I'd have been much happier with that. But our government is so controlled now by a very, very small group of private industry.
Pharmaceuticals.
Well, you know, pharmaceuticals, defense, insurance, media, all this. And when they get to writing bills to their benefit, everybody's cost has gone up. Healthcare has gotten worse. It hasn't done any good. You know, it's you know, how do we do this? And we're in an election year this year. I think it's interesting. You know, I ran for governor of Arizona. And, you know, the tricks that Ted Cruz has tried to pull on Ben Carson, first of all, saying, oh, he dropped out. He quit today. He flew back to, you know, get a change of clothes and spend a night with his family and go get back on the campaign trail. When they start telling falsehoods, when they start doing things, when they start manipulating what the news is, that's not the kind of people we want to support.
Right.
We don't want guys who win by hook or by crook. We want guys who are stand-up guys. We want good people in government, not a bunch of creeps. Look at the other side, Hillary. Oh my God, you know, I mean, a felon just not convicted yet. Yet.
Or depending on the intel, has been convicted multiple times.
Well, you know,
I was going to ask you about that before you go on to Hillary. Who do you feel within the Congress, House and Senate, are there any of them that are supporting the changes that Putin has instigated?
You know, I don't see any obvious supporters of what Putin's trying to do. I just don't. I think that our Congress is really controlled by the Israeli lobby. If you look at it, I think we only have one congressman out there who has not signed the loyalty oath to Israel, and you know, the rest of them all have. So, and here's how the Israel lobby got so big. If you come out and say, no, Israel, you're behaving badly, and I'm not supporting you on this, and they say, well, sign the loyalty oath. Well, I'm not going to sign that oath to Israel. I'm a loyal American. Well, if you don't sign the oath, we're not going to give you any money. And whoever runs against you, no matter how much you raise, we're going to give them more. And, you know, the sad reality in this country is 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins.
Yeah. Wow. 96%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Senator Fulbright, you know, he's deceased now, but his wife is a friend of mine. And we talked about that, how whenever he was challenging the Israel lobby, the very next election cycle, the Israel lobby came in and they just spent and spent and spent independent expenditures, campaign contributions, everything they could do to silence any critics of Israel. And that's how the game is played. And John F. Kennedy had it correct before he was assassinated. He signed an executive order demanding that the AIPAC, Israel lobby, be registered as a foreign agent.
Mm.
And, that was undone by Lyndon Johnson about 3 weeks after you know, the coup that put Johnson in power. And imagine how different our political landscape would be today if AIPAC had to function as a registered foreign agent. Do you think you'd have many senators or congressmen taking payoffs or bribes or campaign contributions from them?
No,
you wouldn't. Kennedy had it right. And, you know, I don't think this country's had a legitimate government since that coup took place.
Yeah. Now, that does that have to do with the bar? The British Accreditation Regency, is that also tying in with that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's
I think so. So who are you thinking is looking really good for the elections?
You know, here's all right. I'm kind of liking Donald Trump. You know,
oh,
I mean,
my God, Mike.
Well, wait. Hear me out. I think he's flamboyant. I think he's verbose. I think he's a lot of things. But I think he's actually talking about issues that mattered. His comments about Muslims, that was a little over the top. But, you know, his comments about illegal aliens in this country, and I don't think we need to build a wall. I think a wall would be a waste of money. I think what we need to do is enforce the laws that are on the books. And, you know, today, if you're convicted of hiring an illegal alien, the penalty is a $10,000 fine and 6 months in prison. And so if you look at these corporations that hire massive amounts of illegal aliens, you know, the meat processing, the food processing, Hormel or Tyson Foods or Marriott, there's a lot of, Hyatt, Hilton's. You look at them and say, you know what? You only need to enforce about three or four cases and of a Fortune 50 type company. Go out and pick up their board of directors, their top 50 managers, put them in jail, fine the company $10,000 a piece for every illegal they've got hired. And I guarantee you'd see pink slips going out the next day. And a lot of these illegals wouldn't be employed or employable in this country anymore if we would just enforce the laws that we have. I don't think there's a need to build a wall. But back to Trump, you know, he says a lot of things that I do like. Says some things I'm not so crazy about, you know. His tax plan is the best. You look at the analysis on that. That's going to put the most money back in the pockets of the American people. Whether you make less than 20 grand or whether you make more than 250, you're still going to get the biggest increase under Trump. But I think there's, you know, I think if Trump was really, really, really smart right now, he would do one of two things. One of them would be that he would look and name Ben Carson as his running mate right away. And Well, because Ben Carson's black. Ben Carson is a true conservative. And, you know, he articulates the conservative principles very, very well. It would peel off, it would break the black ownership, I'm sorry, the Democrat ownership of the black voting bloc. It would break it. So you would have blacks for the first time considering crossing party lines and voting for Republicans. That would be a smart move for Trump. And then I also look at this a little bit deeper. You know, imagine if, Trump is forced into naming an acceptable politician, someone else who ran, a Cruz, a Rubio, a Santorum, one of those guys, who, do you think if Trump was assassinated that they would help cover up the assassination the same way Johnson helped cover up the assassination? I think they would. Carson's the other outsider. I don't think he would go for it. I think he would say no, and I'm not going to play ball. And besides, it would make a great 30-second soundbite. Trump, Carson, competency, compassion. I think those would be two things. That would be number one scenario. That would be to secure the Republican nomination and take that.
I think you should contact Carson.
Well, actually, it's not his decision. It's Trump's. I think it would be very good for him. Now, the other thing, if Trump doesn't name Carson as his running mate, and if Sanders gets screwed out of it by Hillary, which I think he's going to be, I think reaching across the aisle and naming Bernie Sanders as Trump's running mate would be a smart thing to do. Because, look, we have ideological differences, but we both want the country to run better. We can work through our differences. We can find the best solutions for all people. And this is not about the party. It's about the country. And I think that would be such a uniting move to have a Trump-Sanders ticket, which I think would be absolutely the other brilliant move that Trump could do if he was really serious about turning this country around.
So, Mike, you know, you're a sharp guy and you're very aware and you're very enlightened in the conversations we have off air. What would you say to the fact that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, they both are on the same puppet strings, they're both doing the same stuff behind closed doors, they're both playing the same BS and...
Yep, yes, 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 and yes.
Okay, so here we are today, 2016, and we are being readied and positioned, I personally feel, to create a new way of governing the people of this planet as well as the United States. And I hope to say America one of these days, totally different thing. And if that's the case, why would we want to support the existing regime when it's owned by these elite dudes at the top.
Well, you're right, and that's why I like Trump and Carson, because they're both outsiders and not part of the political machine. That's why I kind of like Bernie Sanders, even though he is part of the political machine. He's really a socialist. He's not a Democrat. And so I look at the outsiders as the ones who might be able to set the new template. But this is the machine we have. And until we have a new machine, political machine, this is what we got to live with. I mean, we don't have a choice. It's, you know, whether I vote or don't vote, it's not going to matter. They're going to put somebody in that office.
Right.
You know, and so I realize that my influence is, less than zero, but I'm still going to, do the best I can and hope for a good outcome on this. So.
Well, back to Hillary, I cut you off.
Let's go back for a second, though, because you just said something. And I want to point something out to the listeners here. If you look at the top donors, the top 10 donors for the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, they're identical. It's the same list. The order might be different. This one may be number one on the Democrat side, and they're number three on the Republican side. This one might be number two on the Republican side, might be number six on the Democrat side. But it's the same list.
Yeah.
It's the same list of corporations and individuals. Don't forget that. It, like your point that they all work for the money. And really, that's the thing. If we would take the money out of politics, say that there are no corporate donations allowed, nobody's allowed to give more than $100. That's
it. You know what else, too, Mike, is I really feel we need to get out of the stage performance and get more into the old ways of doing things, which is local council meetings and politics, where we're actually hearing the people and accommodating and acknowledging their needs and coming up with councils and having people elect their own sets of councils within their own towns and then possibly after that would be cities, states, etc. I mean, we really need to go back to the grassroots. We've been talking about it forever, but
you make a point. You make a good point. I mean, let's say you live in a small town. You live in Southern Cal, and let's say your town had a town council. There's 10 people. Maybe the town council could send one representative to the state level, and of the state level, they could send one or two to the national level.
Right.
But the way that elections are right now, it's really, really. It's warped. It's gotten so twisted. It's gotten so strange. I don't. It doesn't make any sense to me anymore. It just doesn't. It's all 30-second sound bites and negative ads.
Well, and don't forget that it's all mind control. Mm-hmm. It's all to convince everybody that's sitting out there watching or listening to think that this is the only way we can accomplish anything is by debating, arguing, putting people down, causing dissension, nailing them for their character, and it's those that stand in their truth and their courage and their character that are the ones that become the demonically attacked rather than the other way around. I mean, it's completely upside down. So in order to really make the changes that Obama used as his, his campaign, I mean, it was all about change. You know,
hope and change.
Yeah, it's like we the people cannot keep sitting on our butts expecting everybody to do it.
Well, let me give you you just mentioned the Bar Association, and the bar has a tremendous influence on our political process.
Yeah.
Look at how the justice system is set up, our courts. I don't care if it's civil, I don't care if it's criminal, I don't care if it's family court, whatever. It's always set up as an adversarial system. Me against you. It's not set up to, hey, let's find something that works for both parties so nobody gets screwed over. You know, it's not a I win all, you lose all.
Right.
There is fundamental flaws in the paradigm that our culture, that reside within our culture. There are fundamental flaws. These go back, not just generations, but millennia, these flaws of the winner take all type thing. And it's everywhere. The question is how do we stop it? How do we stop it today? How do we come to a set of situations where, hey, everybody does okay?
There's enough room for all of it to happen. And actually, you just hit the nail on the head, which is the number one major problem with the existing so-called solutions that they're presenting is that it's rotten to the core, because the core value, the core truth that it's based on is that everything is finite, impossible to gain, and that there's not enough to go around for everybody. And that is just an out lie. Now, in your reality, yeah, we're seeing that. We're seeing that people can't pay their rent, they can't pay their mortgage payment, they can't find a job, they can't put their kids through school because there's not enough money. But if you keep digging deeply enough and you start really uncovering, like Mike said, the layers and the peeling of the onions, you will find that ultimately it's all based on that number one lie that there's not enough.
So let me give you a great example of this, because if you read the Russian studies, how many years have we been hearing about peak oil? That once we hit peak oil, we've explored all the known reserves, and then we're going to be running out, and it's going to get tough, and scarcity, and prices are going to go up, yada, yada, yada. Well, you read the Russian studies, where oil is a natural occurring reproducing element that the earth itself generates. And if you look at the last 3 years in a row, the known oil reserves have gone up 40% year over year. And so, okay, well, maybe oil isn't finite. Maybe the earth is producing it on an ongoing basis and we're never going to run out. Well, you know what that does? The price of oil gets below $20 a barrel pretty quick.
I mean, that's based on basic economy. You know, you have, if you have more product, then the price goes down. And this is the whole scam, is that we bought into this. The same thing with water. There are so many whistleblowers out there, one in particular that I really want to interview, that is just blasting it all over the place. She has scientific data. She has total proof that the whole scarcity of water thing is a complete lie. She can prove it beyond a shadow of doubt that the whole thing is a scam. It's all just like the oil, so they can jack up our prices, especially places like where you and I live, Mike, where, you know, the climate is dry and we don't get a lot of rain. You know, we're paying, you know, incredibly high prices just to have water, which is our divine sovereign right to have water.
Mm-hmm. You can't live without it.
Exactly.
At least not more than 4 days.
Exactly. So, you know, God, I hope not.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and it's something that everyone needs to be aware of. And but you hit some good points that they've created a scarcity model that is a fundamental flaw in how 99% of the human population thinks. And if you would change that one perception, and it's a perception of scarcity, it's not a reality of scarcity. You would change that one thing, everybody would start living differently and interacting differently. So the challenge is, how do we change the perceptions? How do we get people to open up their eyes? How do we get them to see?
Well, I feel that we are at a crossroads where people have got to start getting involved. We are literally going back to the days where no more sitting on your couch eating potato chips and saying, it doesn't matter anyway, because we are at a place where it does matter. And every single person's intention is affecting the way that we unfold this paradigm. This paradigm's going down, folks. This paradigm is starting to crumble.
Well, one of the things that I've talked about on my own radio show a few times, and I think I've talked about it with you, is that if we don't have a vision of what we want the future to be, there's other people out there, other parties, let me say that, not people, parties out there that do have a vision for us. And we don't, typically we think in a 5-year plan, if we're proactive and forward-looking, a 5-year plan. But we need to develop a 5-year plan, a 20-year plan, a 50-year plan, a 500-year plan. Where do we want this planet to go? What do we want for our people? What do we want it to be? And what are our assumptions that we have to make today in order to build this plan, this vision? And we need to reach consensus on this on a global basis. Because like I said, if we don't have a plan, something else out there has a plan for you. If you like being the livestock, that's what they got in mind for you.
Well, and we all have one thing in common, and that is we ultimately all have one supreme creator, period. You know, it's just like what you said, getting all of the religiosity out of the way and all the wars and all the dissension, and being able to know that that's our one connecting value, and we all carry a divine spark. So ultimately, we are all, if you talk about the humans on the planet and the those that are walking here that are extraterrestrials on the planet who really want to make a difference and provide freedom and justice for all, okay? You know, we've heard about that in our American history books, but the truth of the matter is this is where we're at the crossroads. Are we going to make the decisions? We have the authority to make the decisions to affect an entire history of our lineage. Are we going to finally get off of our couches and start making some decisions and taking some action? Because the planet is supporting us. There's so many people out there. There's so many grassroots movements. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible time to take action.
Well, like I said, that's, you know, on my radio show, my theme music is the Superman theme.
I saw that.
And, you know, the reason I chose that, and I tell people this on a regular basis on my own show, that the reason I picked that music is because there ain't no Superman. No guy in a, you know, blue pants and a red cape is going to come fix it for you. You got to do it. You know, it'd be nice to sit back and relax and have something like that come down to save us, but it ain't happening. And, you know, we have to do it ourselves. This is a do-it-yourself project, probably the most complex one in human history.
Very true. And I would like to add to that, you were asking, well, where do we go from here? You know, instead of doing the same old reaction and feeling the same old feelings about, you know, you're not feeling fulfilled with your life or your job or your family or where you're going, is to step back and make a change within yourself. This is a time to go within and look at yourself. It's nothing to do with criticism. It has nothing to do with saying that you're a bad person.
You know, if you don't take that time and look inward and examine yourself and try, well, we all have blind spots, you know, because nobody sees us. We don't see ourselves the way everybody else sees us. We see ourselves through a false lens because we don't have an adequate vision of ourselves. But we all know that we've got deficiencies. We all know we have strengths. And you have to go inside and find out what those are. And that's something that everybody has to do. And you know, I feel really sorry for people who can't do that and who externalize everything. Oh, my life is this because. My life is that because. And they're all external. No, your life is that because of you. And until you grow up and get over it, whatever it may be, good or bad, you're not going to change. You're not going to grow. You're not going to evolve.
Yeah, it's truly a time to get out of the victimhood. Mm-hmm. And that's really,
it is.
You know, if you take any time at all, look into how the entire human race has been created into a victimhood race.
It is. And you know, you look at how we have dependent classes of people out there now.
Right.
You know, we have what I call the permanent underclass. And they've been told and they've been rewarded for allowing themselves to be victims. You know, if you know, the multiple generations on welfare, you know, inner cities, all that kind of nonsense. And we have to change all that. That's all part of it, and ending that. I want to give you a plug here now.
Okay.
Your implant removal process, which I went through, was a wonderful process. And if you want to shake the victimhood thing, that is a real, real good place to start. Because you know, I used to wake up in the middle of the night, you know, 2-3 in the morning, and be awake for an hour or two with what I used to call the nameless dreads. And it's whatever was stressing me in my life at that time would always bother me and wake me up, and I'd have to sit there and process until I could fall back asleep again, if I could fall back asleep again. But going through that implant removal process there, since then, I've shaken the victimhood off of it.
Yes.
And I've quit. The thing I've quit doing, I used to say, you know, God, help me. God, do this, do that, do the other thing for me. Forget about that. It's too busy. I got to fix this.
Yeah.
I've got to find a way. I've got to come up with whatever the innovative solution is. It's got to come from me. And there may be some divine inspiration behind whatever that is. I don't know. But it's got to come from inside of you. We can't look externally for anything. We have to look internally for it all.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Mike. And I would also add to everyone, If you'd like to check that out at galacticconnection.com, there's a lot of information about the implant removals. Part 1, 2, 3, we just added 4. We're probably going to be adding 5. And it really is truly empowering and kicking people in the you-know-whats to step into their own mastery, which we've been conditioned and duped and manipulated to believe that we don't have the power or the ability to really create this into the world that we want. We do, and we have the authority. And there's people like Mike and myself that are fully behind that and you 100%. If you're willing to step into that, we're going to support you all the way. Mm-hmm. All the way.
Yep.
But anyway,
I want to change subjects because you and I have talked about Dan Winter.
Yes.
I told you I'll introduce you to him so he can be interviewed on your show as well.
Cool.
And so, I went down to Georgia and experienced that Therify device. And this is a neat device, and it is a negentropic bioenergetic field, and there's nothing like it that I've experienced before. And this is something to query Dan about and watch for, because this thing could make a difference. It's quite fascinating. You know, one of the things that I noticed in it is I went into the field for a 5-minute period of time, and it felt like 5 seconds. There was a time dilation in my perception of time while I was in it. And I don't know how real it was or wasn't, because in the field, out of the field, it was like two different, time was going at two different speeds. Much slower in the field, much faster outside of it. It was very, very interesting. And so this is something that you need to get Dan on and query him about. And
Yeah, I'd love to, because we're very involved in the quantum therapies, getting really into the quantum field and trying to figure out how to change disease and virus completely, even on the planet, not just with each individual. Galactic Connection is very involved in that.
I know you and I have talked offline. I'm trying to set you up here and give you some good things. You get some future guests.
You can tell that he's trying to set me up.
I'm trying to promote you. Come on. I try to give you a boost.
Thank you. You know what? Mike's better about that than I am myself, you know?
So
really. But, well, Mike, is there anything else that you can give us today about the update on, you know, what's going on overseas, as far as what do you feel we have to look forward to with this whole change with Russia basically starting to pull out?
Well, you know, like I said, I think it is a remarkably, remarkably clever move on the part of the Russians. I think it really defeated the attempt at Western propaganda. And the reason, like I said, the West has this business model. It's you go into a country, you put up an occupation, you set up a base, and you stay there forever. You know, the U.S. has no good reason to have military bases in Germany or Japan right now, but they're there. And you look at the U.S., you know, the 794 bases we have around the world in nearly every country. They're out there, and that's, you can never get rid of them. It's like if the U.S. military comes into your country, it's like the country got herpes. It'll never go away. You know, it's one of those kind of things. It's not pleasant. You're not going to like it. It's not going to do any good, but you can't get rid of it.
And Mike, not to interrupt, but I got to say this. And when you guys are doing your research and you start looking into military bases, and you have to step back and say to yourself, why are there so many military bases across the world? It is not just necessarily that there's a military presence. It's what's going on underneath those military bases. So check it out. Once again, stop sitting on your couches, take action, and know that there are a huge growing force of people across the world that have had it and want to create a new world here.
One other thing that I need to point out, and this doesn't get discussed very much, but you know, you're obliquely referencing underground bases, obliquely. But I want people to realize that never before in the history of this world has the surface of this planet been punctured so many times, so many places. Whether it's oil wells, whether it's water wells, whether it's underground bases, this Earth has been punctured on every surface, everywhere, every possible way it can be. It's something new in the last 100+ years or so that's happened that has never happened to this planet before. And I think we need to help the planet heal a bit from that.
I'm glad you brought that up because it might be hard for people to understand, but the Earth has meridians and chakra systems just like the human body does, because it's an organic matter, piece of matter. So there's no accident to that, Mike. And specifically placing those at those meridian points so that what? They can keep control of the energetic flow on the planet, which of course affects each and every one of us.
Yep. But the thing is, like, every oil well everywhere, and there's more holes in the ground, whether it's on the bottom of the ocean, whether it's on the plains, the mountains, the valley. There's never been more holes in this planet ever. And you if you go back just 100 years ago, you had a well. It's something you dug. It might be 30, 40 feet deep tops. You know, you dug it by hand. You didn't go down, you know, a mile and a half, 2 miles. This is a new phenomena on this planet. This I kind of look at this as not an accidental assault.
No, not at all. And also, what about the sinkholes?
Yeah, now that's a whole nother.
Well, I'm just saying it all applies. It all fits in. But anyway, well, you're awesome. Thank you so much. You're always really filling us up on this good information that we ourselves kind of can go.
Well, the thing of it is, you know, and since we're winding things up, it seems, the other thing is that the Western financial system is in trouble. It has been in trouble, but there's nothing else to replace it. And the BRIC system is coming up, and you know, I don't know what's going to happen here, but folks, you know, be prepared. I mean, like I said, you know, next time you're at the grocery store, pick up a couple extra cans of beans and an extra bag of rice and whatever, you know, because you don't know what you don't know. But I do know that the Western financial system is trouble. We wouldn't be having these problems if the smart guys were really as smart as they think they are. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have had the financial meltdown in 2007 and 8. There may be another one on the way. I don't know. I don't want to be gloom and doom, because, like I said, people are feeling a little bit better now, because when they fill up their gas tanks, they're getting filling up for $50, not $100, and not filling it up. So anyhow, I digress.
Well, and Mike, there is truly another force of people on the planet that have worked very diligently to create kind of a new online financial system, so that we can segue into that actually almost seamlessly. So all this fear porn that's out there, that you're going to lose your money and you're not going to have running water and all this, again, remember who is running this planet. Just remember that.
They want you to be afraid. They want you to be panicked. They want you to be in a sense of despair. They want all of your baser, more negative emotions to dominate your process. And once you get yourself so secure and you're comfortable and you're confident, they don't like that. They don't want you to be happy. They don't want you using your higher functions. They want you functioning in the basement, not on the rooftop.
I love that. They want you functioning in the basement. Well, wow. With that said, thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure.
It's been a while. I don't know if anybody remembers the last time I interviewed him. They took my site down for 5 days.
Yeah, well, we don't have nothing that groundbreaking today. So, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And everybody, please stay tuned. Check out veteranstoday.com. They're an outstanding alternative media source for very well researched intel on the ground of what's going on around the world.
It's really the only real news source you're going to get. It's the only real active intel. And people ask us, how do you get, you know, such accurate stories? How do you know? Because we go there and we see people and we make contacts and we make connections, and you know, we do it firsthand. We don't just sit back and read something that came in off the internet. We don't wait for the Reuters wire to come in. You know, we do it ourselves. We actually go on boots on the ground, eyes on the site, you know, go see it.
Right on. So, right on. That's the way it should be. So everyone stay tuned. Again, we love you. Check out galacticconnect.com. We have some phenomenal new phases. Phase 4, you really need to take a look at. It's called the Guardian Protection Initiation. It is a resolution to the monitoring, the remote viewing, the psychic attack that we're all experiencing. So check it out. It's phenomenal. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. I hope so. Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Thank you. And we love you. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.